Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Perhaps no parable of Jesus has drawn as many tears as that of the prodigal son. That's because we're all prodigals. When the father greets his returning son, we see just how much God wants to forgive his children and receive them back into fellowship. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Erwin Lutzer is continuing a series from the parables he's calling You Can't Redo Life. Today, we turn again to Luke chapter 15 for more on getting parenting right.
And so the father is not only waiting for the son, but the father also is willing to be shamed for the son. And then the father forgives the son. This is an amazing story. Do you remember how I read a moment ago in the pigsty what the boy said? He's rehearsing his speech. And there in the pigsty, he says, I am going to say to my father, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. So he's rehearsing the speech as he goes home. He gets to his father, and he cannot complete the speech. There's an ending that is missing. He does get out the words, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But then he wants to say, make me as one of thy hired servants. But that's not what he says. That's not what he said to his father. Why? Because he was being smothered with kisses, and he could not finish the speech he had made. The father had welcomed his wayward boy. So here he is also willing to forgive his son. Now, if the father were to do that, we'd say, that is absolutely remarkable. What a dad this is. Talk about grace-based parenting. But it even gets better than that. You'll notice in the text that he says to the servants, bring hither the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and you know that calf that we have for special occasions? Everybody kept a fatted calf in case they needed a feast sometime. You know the fatted calf, not the skinny one, but the fatted calf. Kill it and let's have a party because this my son was dead and is alive and is lost and is found. When the man said, find the best robe and put it on him, he was really talking about his own robe. In those days, the patriarch of the family had a special robe that he wore only on very festive occasions. And what he was saying to those who were listening, his servants, he said, bring the best robe, which of course they understood to mean to be his own robe, the dad's own robe, and let's put that on him. Let's put a ring on his finger as a symbol of authority. And no son in those days, no servant in those days, I should say, would ever wear shoes. But let us put also shoes on his feet. And then let's kill the fatted calf and let's celebrate. You say, well, wasn't this father a little bit naive? I mean, after all, this boy had disgraced him, had squandered his inheritance. The answer is, yes, it may appear that way, and I'm sure that the next day they had some talks about accountability. But for tonight, let's throw a party. This, my son, was dead. We had the villagers thought that we should have a funeral for him, but he's alive. And he was lost, and he is found. The Pharisees to whom this story was being told looked at this and thought to themselves, this is absolutely absurd. Love does things that are foolish, but love has power. And if you love your boy, you'll welcome him home despite his sin. Now, there's something else that the father does is he finds himself in a predicament that he has to actually now defend his son. He has to defend the boy because now it gets intriguing. And when you first read the story of the prodigal, you think to yourself, you know, if Jesus were a good storyteller, he'd stop there. After all, the boy is home. It's a wonderful parable on God's forgiveness. But then Jesus adds this bit about the elder brother. And what Jesus adds about the elder brother actually turns out to be the very heart of this story. It is the heart of this parable. Let's pick it up in verse 25. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came in and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he received him safe and sound. Did the elder brother say, great, I've been praying that he'd come home. This is wonderful. Praise God for this grace and mercy that my father showed to this kid brother of mine. I can hardly wait to welcome him. That's not the way it turned out. He said, verse 28, but he was angry. He refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, and he said to, and he answered his father, look, these many years I've served you. I never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this your son has come, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you have killed the fatted calf for him. And the father says to him, son, you're always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting for us to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive and is lost and is found. And the story ends there, and we never find out whether or not the brother went into the feast. The answer is, he probably didn't. What's going on here? What Jesus wanted to do to the Pharisees who were criticizing him for spending time with the tax gatherers and the sinners, he wanted to illustrate that those who understand their need, and even those who have gone to the far country, actually are much more welcomed by the Father than somebody who believes that his relationship with God is based on his performance. You see, here's a young man who said to himself, I'm doing all of the right things. I am the one who gets up early in the morning. I go to bed late at night, and the farm is prospering because of me, and you don't do this for me. Of course, the father says, you know, everything that I have is yours. Several lessons immediately grow out, and that is, it is possible to be a son of God and still live like a servant. It's as if this man didn't understand that he had an inheritance. He could throw a party whenever he wanted to throw a party. But as long as his relationship with the father was based on a sense of duty, it was based on a conviction of merit, his anger toward his father grew. And I might say to those of you who believe that your relationship with God is based on merit, you're going to be angry with God and you're going to be angry with others. If you believe that God owes you, and the reason that God owes you is because of what you've done, and look at, I've abided by the rules, I've tried to go to church, I've tried to be the best person I possibly can, and therefore God owes me blessing, he owes me heaven, you are going to be bitterly disappointed and angry, because when God doesn't come through for you, and when you begin to understand that your merit does not add anything to God's grace toward you, then you will become bitter and angry, and your soul will be closed to the Father. You see, the elder brother illustrates the fact that it is possible to be busy in the Father's work and still not share the Father's heart. It's possible for you to be faithful in your service to the Lord, and yet there's no connection really with your Father. All that there is resentment, particularly to those whom God seems to bless. By the way, have you ever noticed that God sometimes blesses some people more than he should? Yeah. Have you ever noticed that? I've certainly noticed that sometimes God blesses people that I wouldn't bless if I were God. Are you envious because God is generous? As a matter of fact, when this boy is emoting here and explaining why he won't come into the feast, you'll notice he says, when this thy son, he never even called him his brother. He says, when this thy son has come, who has devoured thy living with harlots, with prostitutes, you've killed for him the fatted calf. Interestingly, nowhere in the text earlier does it say that the boy did that. The elder brother is kind of tipping his hand as to what he would be doing if he had the nerve to leave the farm and spend time in the far country. And so there he is, out of sorts with his father. Why was the father so delighted to see this wayward boy? The wayward boy came and said, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against thee, and if I am to receive even so much as a crust of bread, it is going to be a demonstration of your matchless grace. And the father loved that because the father deals with us on the basis of grace and not merit. And so what the father was saying is, at last I have somebody who's willing to wear my robe and to have the ring and to give shoes to, because I'm a giving father. I love to give. And as long as I was dealing with the elder brother on the basis of merit, I couldn't give, because I only deal with you on the basis of grace. Some of you think that the way to the Father is by being good. Well, it's good to be good, but that's not the way to the Father. The only way to the Father is by grace. I think it was Mark Twain who said on one occasion, having spent a great deal of my life with good people, he said, I now understand why Jesus spent most of his time with tax gatherers and sinners. We all know what it's like to be with good people, judgmental. They become the standard by which others should be judged. Resentful of God's mercy poured out on other people. Why? Because they're out of touch with the Father's heart. Though they delight in the fact that they have been so very good. Let me ask the question, how does this relate to those of us who are fathers? And I understand that we can't take all of the things that are here with this father and apply them, because certainly with our children we do have issues of accountability. But first of all, I want us to understand that as fathers, we have the responsibility of being lawgivers, but also grace givers.
This is Pastor Lutzer, and my friend today, I'm so glad that you tuned into this broadcast. What we need to understand is, as fathers, we need to be grace givers, but also law givers. And this parable teaches both. And at the end of this broadcast, you're going to be given information as to how these messages can be yours. Meanwhile, thank you so much for your financial help, for your prayers. Together, we are impacting the lives of many. God bless you. See you right here next time.
Erwin Lutzer with more of Getting Parenting Right, the fourth message in a series from the parables on You Can't Redo Life. There are really two prodigal sons. One left in rebellion, the other stayed in rebellion. Next time, more teaching from a famous parable. All 10 parts of You Can't Redo Life can be yours on CD, sent as our way of saying thanks for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.